Comics in Comic Book City, USA. It's Acme Cast number 267. I'm Steven.
I'm Austin.
I'm Jay.
And I'm Pete.
And we are coming together here in the shop, and we're going to do this about every 2 weeks just to get back to the original feel of Acme Cast, the round table, sitting around the store, shooting the stuff. And one of the things that Austin came up with when he recommended this was that each time we get to know one of your Acme Army members a little bit better. And so, hey, did you guys know that Pete's parents owned a video store?
What?
Crazy. What?
That was my tagline for many conversations here, because we'd be talking about like a movie or something, and I'd be like, oh, my mom and dad owned a movie store. And now it's like, now it's an ongoing joke that every time we say something, like eventually someone will just slip that in there. It's awesome.
I feel like you get a little too much heat for that. Because if people remember Brad, who worked here, oh, God, at this point, it was probably like
5 years ago,
5-6 years ago. Every one of Brad's stories started with when I worked at the pawn shop, yep, or when we were on the job site, because yep, Brad was a carpenter. And before that, he worked
at a pawn shop.
And that's what all of his stories, yep, were. And I'm sure for like 5 years, I was like, you know, when I was at Outback. So I can't fault you too heavily for this one, Pete. I'm going to give you a little bit of a pass, but you also had kind of the job that everyone dreams of. I applied to work at Video Review, but people probably remember the franchise that your parents had.
Yeah, it was Movies to Go. If you know the Cardinal Development over there by the airport, we had one by there. We had one in Summerfield, and for a while we had one in Stokesdale. So like a lot of people I went to high school with knew me as like the guy who owned the movie store. And since these guys didn't know me in high school, I have to remind them constantly that my parents own a movie store.
Steven is right, though. I mean, you know, just being a kid, it's kind of like you look at a couple of the dream jobs that you have when you're a kid, and it's like, oh, man, I bet working in a movie store is cool. I bet working in a comic shop is cool. So, yeah, I can't bust you too much for it.
Well, the other thing, too, is like I technically had management status because my parents owned it. Did I mention my parents owned a movie store? No, but every year they had like movie conventions, and every company had their own kind of little stall or something. And each year they all got together and had, there's like hundreds of stars there. I've met like Corey Feldman, Hulk Hogan, Oliver Stone, Pamela Anderson, like all these crazy stars. And that's why I always bring it up, because we'll be talking about somebody. I'll be like, oh, did I mention I met Sully Moonfry?
Otherwise known as Punky Brewster.
But yeah, so yeah, I met Rodney Dangerfield. He was drunk when he came in. And it was one of those things that like he was just kept looking down and would not look up at each person he signed an autograph for. He was just kind of like, autograph, pass, autograph, pass. And yeah, it was really funny. But like I went up to, I was just like, oh, you know, I loved you ever since I was little, and you know, back to school and all this stuff.
So what was he promoting at that point? Ladybugs?
No, it was
Wally Sparks?
Rover Dangerfield.
Whoa.
He was there for a cartoon movie, drunk off of his, it smelled like scotch or something when I walked up to him. I was just, I was 18 at the time. So I was like, oh my God, Rodney Dangerfield parties.
You should have known that by then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was partying on Ladybugs.
But I think one of the things that's a common misconception about video stores, just like people that think with comics that like all comics are returnable. Like, why don't we have this? Because we underordered it, because everything's returnable. And last week on the show, we talked a lot about DC Rebirth and DC taking the top market share for units sold by such a wide margin. And that's mainly because a lot of those books are returnable. at a video store when you did not return your video or lost it or damaged it or whatever, and they charged you like $125. It wasn't just Blockbuster trying to squeeze a couple more pennies out of you or just flexing their muscle. Those VHS tapes cost a lot of money.
Yeah, back then I remember my mom bought like, I think it was 20 copies of Dances with Wolves. And I remember she complained that each one of those VHS copies was $97 a piece.
Shoot. For Dances with Wolves. In the 90s.
Yeah, in the 90s, yeah. And that's like, that was before like Walmarts and all that stuff had them in there for $19.99 or whatever.
But so yeah, that's like when there would be a giant release at the video store and a whole section of the wall would be one VHS tape, like 50 copies of it. That's like $5,000 investment store.
Like I remember when Jurassic Park came out on home video finally. I mean, it's like you said, there would just be a wall of nothing but Jurassic Park and then like posters, standees, like all kinds of other supplemental material. So I can only imagine.
And that's like, it was like, it's like anything too, like with comics and other like media and everything like that. Like the, if you don't make your money back in those first few weeks, you're done. Like that's, you lost a huge investment, especially in all those copies. Like you have to have them running out like every, you know, every day pretty much on weekends. And
but I guess if you were at Movies to Go, which was a smaller chain, how did you guys feel about Blockbuster?
Like that, my mom always, I remember my mom reading in the early 90s, like she was really smart about business, and she read this thing in like a tech magazine or something that they were doing fiber optic cables and they were doing research for it. And she was like, in 10 years, like people are just going to be like, have movies coming into their house. They're not gonna have to leave their house. And I remember she said that like it was 10 or 15 years before, like even, you know, like anything like that, like Netflix or anything. It was really crazy that she kind of called it. Like she was one of the first people in the state of North Carolina, probably the East Coast, that started renting video games. And it was just because it was like, you know, all these people are spending all this money on video games. Why don't we just buy them in like, you know, $5 for two nights? And that's what people like, yeah, they ate that up. And then I remember Blockbuster Cop. I mean, I always remember we had it for like, it was months before, and then Blockbuster started doing it and Action Video and all those chains. So it was kind of like, it was neat seeing like the small business get one up on the big guys. But yeah, she was always worried about Blockbuster because, you know, it was like, you know, it's just, they started crowding on our turf and yeah, gang wars.
They opened up on Battleground.
That's right.
Yeah. Closer.
Yeah, that was like 8 miles away. And like some people, they just stopped there on their way home from work instead of.
I know, you know, we've kind of talked about it before. You know, you don't see it too often in the comics world with like people breaking street dates. But I know you said that that's happened a lot, you know, with movies and stuff like that before. I mean, I don't really know like what the protocol is, like what happens to comic shops that, you know, that do that. But I always wondered what happened to video stores.
Well, I can't ever remember like a specific video store, but I remember we had a Revco next to us at one of the shopping centers. And they actually, it was Jurassic Park. And it was like, everybody was like, you know, like frothed at the mouth for this movie. Couldn't wait for it to get on VHS to own it. And they had it like the day before it was supposed to come out. And my mom called and complained about it. I'm pretty sure like it was one of those things that they couldn't sell. What was it, like Paramount or Universal? Like it was one of those things that like they's like, nope, no more. Like you can't do that anymore.
Dang.
I heard the crazy thing about Street Date though was that you only got one fine for breaking it. It wasn't like every copy that you sold was another fine. And so I
that
remember
stopped it.
The Blockbuster, when their Blockbuster was here on Battleground, and it was probably right around the time that it was about to go under, when Dark Knight came out, it was on Saturday when it was supposed to come out on like Tuesday, and people were like, yeah, they broke Street Date. And so like we all went up there and bought copies of Dark Knight 4 days early. And so I think there are the bigger things, like you were saying, where they won't distribute to you anymore. Like in theory, we get day early delivery on our comics. But if we broke the street date and got caught by a secret shopper or whatever, then we wouldn't be able to get day early anymore. But I think that there is something to like weighing how many copies you could actually sell ahead of everyone else versus the fine of doing it.
If you get caught, yeah, someone bothers. The Movies to Go, after your parents sold it, I was a customer there like in 2005, and the guy that owned it would let me rent movies a couple days early.
Yeah.
Until like one time I remember asking, he's like, yeah, I can't do it anymore. So I don't know if he got fined or what happened, but
We used to get like sampler type videos, and it always had across the bottom, like, if you rented this or bought this, dial 1-800 no copies. And like, I still to this day have dozens and dozens of those VHS tapes. It is because we probably got them like after they left a movie theater. It was usually about 6 months between movie theater and actual like in-store rentals. And I remember it was like 3 months after it was out of the theaters, we usually got like a VHS tape just to watch. And I remember having, I think it was one time like 10 or 15 people over my parents' basement. And we all just kind of sat around and I forget what movie it was, but it was like really cool that I was like, hey, you guys want to come see like a screening of this movie that just left theaters you don't have to pay for?
Was that like an advanced PDF kind of thing like we get now?
Yeah.
Before the orders are actually due on the VHS tapes so that hopefully you'll order more for the store.
Yeah. Yeah. It was always like, it was always before you had to order them that we got these. And like, it was like a lot of times you just get like a box and have like four or five in there from like different companies. And like some companies did like really good movies and other ones just did like, oh, here's like straight to VHS, like a Puppet Master 6 or something.
those are the movies that are worth the most now.
Air Bud 5.
There was a documentary on Netflix at some point about VHS and the people that are still diehard VHS, because I think they were saying it had the longest shelf life of any entertainment medium in the modern era, like other than books. But you know, cassettes weren't around as long, A-tracks weren't around as long, CDs weren't around as long, even DVDs, you know, moving out to Blu-ray and now moving out to 4K Ultra or 3D movies and stuff. There was never just one format that had so much product released as the VHS tape. And it was so much that there was no way that all of it was going to be transferred to DVD.
Yeah. There's tons of stuff that's not available, that's out of print. You can only get a VHS copy, and some of them are really expensive.
One of them for me that I remember looking for years, 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 and they finally released on DVD was Legend of Billie Jean.
Oh yeah,
the girl that
used to be tough to find.
Helen Slater. She the girl played. Like, she was the first one to play Supergirl in a movie. That was a movie with her in it, and Christian Slater was in it too. And he was like his movie. He was like 13 or 14. He was so young. But I always remember loving that movie, and I looked forever, and I remember the early days at eBay. That was one of the first things I was looking for, was a like an updated digital copy of that.
Do you ever have PTSD flashbacks? Like somebody asks you a question or comes in acting a certain way, and all of a sudden you're back in the movies to go?
There's like one of our customers, Jenning White, if you're listening. Like when I first saw him, I remembered his, like, but we used to have like kind of like here, like subscriptions. We had box numbers. And I remember like sometimes I'd see somebody like, oh, 526. I mean, God, what was his name? His box was 526, but that does happen to me. Sometimes I'll be at a grocery store or Walmart and I'll see somebody and like, I almost try to avoid them because all I remember is their number. And I don't want to be like, hey, I remember you number 26. How are you doing?
Were people as predictable? Maybe predictable is the wrong word, as patterned in movies as they are in comics. Like,
yeah, I get that. Like, you've got like your Marvel guys, your DC guys. Is there like,
you know, like movies you'd order? I mean, I guess
there definitely isn't in movies where there's like a Paramount guy and a Universal guy, and he's like, no, I don't mess with those Universal movies. Like,
I only do Fox,
Warner Brothers, son, represent.
There were people that were like horror people. I remember one guy was a really good customer, and every time we got any kind of wrestling tape, I just be like, just go ahead and throw it in his box, and like he'll come in on Friday and grab it. But it was stuff like that. Yeah, I remember there's several like horror people and just action people that like, oh, this movie's good too. It's like, is there any shooting or blowing up? Yeah, I'll take it kind of stuff. And I do remember too that there were a few people that were they were illiterate, and they'd come in and they'd bring boxes up to the counter and be like, can you go and read this back, read the box of it, read the back of the box to me so I kind of know what this is about, or they'd ask what it's about. And like, you know, it's like, you never really think about that you know, someone might not be able to read and just go up and kind of like look at the boxes, and they have to like rely on the front cover to make their choice. And yeah, so I mean, there was all kinds of different folks that used to come in. But I do remember there were people that I remember seeing a movie coming out and be like, this is for, you know.
A few times, like, you would buy a movie because you'd be like, oh, well, these couple guys will for sure get that.
Yeah, yeah.
Did you guys resell at any point?
Yeah, we had, like, a used movie rack that had, like, all kinds of stuff. And we also had, like, a glass counter that had, like, the, you know, the like, for all Disney did this a lot. It used to be called Mortatorium. For instance, I remember Little Mermaid. That came out for a while, it was like a few months you could buy it. And then after that, they put it on moratorium, meaning that it'd be 3 to 5 years before they put it in any kind of media again, anything.
In the Disney vault.
Yeah, the Disney vault. Yep, that's what they used to call it. And you go to a flea market and you see like a copy of a VHS tape of Little Mermaid for like $200. Like, that's crazy, but that's it. Like, you can't find anywhere. It's like, you know, $200 or nothing. And I remember, like, when that happened, we'd take them off the shelf and then put them in the glass case, like, you know, pre-watched movies. But if you want it, it's like, you know, $20-$50. But yeah, we did have, like, a lot of stuff. And then every now and then we get, like, tables at flea markets and sell you stuff that way, too.
Real quick, where did you used to work?
My mom and dad used to own a movie store. Movies to Go.
Do you still have any promotional stuff laying around, posters, standees?
Yeah.
Or has it all been destroyed by the ravages of time and ammunition?
Yeah, I was about to say, both that and ammunition. I still get slack from this day because we had the original Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle movie standee, and it was like all of them coming out of a sewer and all this stuff, and it was from the waist up, basically, most of them. And me and my brothers one day just got bored, so we got like our handguns and shotguns and took them out back and just shot the heck out of the turtles.
Blasting them turtles.
And it was just one of those things. It was just like we were bored and we had like, you know, we have all this stuff. The only thing
we
I
have
still
all
have.
All these guns.
We have bullets and cardboard. Let's mix them. No, but one of the only thing I still have to this day is it was. I get what they call them, mobiles, where the it like hangs from the ceiling and it's like made of string.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's like the oval of the like the Michael Keaton Batman.
Oh, dude, I remember that
one. Yeah, it's the oval, and then it has the bat symbol, and it, yeah, that's the only thing I still have to this day. Everything else is shot.
It hangs over your bed and plagues you like a toddler.
Yes,
I remember the video store we used to go to when I was a kid. I like begged him and begged him forever, like after Jurassic Park came out, to get the promotional poster off the wall, because it wasn't like the movie one sheet. It was like a diagram of all like the main dinosaurs from the movie and like their height and weight and all this kind of stuff. That's awesome. Was the coolest thing. And I finally got it. And man, I've been like itching to get that poster back at some point.
Yeah, we used to do that too. Like people would come and be like, "Hey, where do you do that poster?" And a lot of times, a lot of people ask for the same posters, but the first person I usually ask, I just like always fold up the bottom right corner and wrote their name in it and then put it back down. So,
nice.
But yeah, we used to give it to people. A lot of like I know a lot of stores used to actually like sell their like the props and all that stuff, but we either gave it away or shot it. One or the other. That's it.
Well, I think since last week, sorry Austin, sorry Pete. We already discussed kind of what had happened in Rebirth, not specifics, but what titles had come out, what had really hit, what wasn't as good or didn't seem to be making with the new initiative quite as much. So I think this week we should talk a little bit around Civil War. And I want to say, I know the feelings on it in this room, but I want there to be some positive things to say or we can move on. Jay has just put down his microphone and stepped away.
I think if you want to hear some positive things about Civil War II, you should probably talk to Jermaine.
Well, I mean, I thought Fallen and Ulysses were pretty good for, you know, part of the story. If you want to know a little bit more about the characters. But yeah, like I got discouraged when I found out that they were sliding back the dates a little bit on some of the releases. And then they added another book, kind of like they did with Civil War.
Secret Wars.
Secret Wars.
I don't have as much of a problem with that, that it's happening. My problem with that is that, Pete, you were with me at Comics Pro in February when Secret Wars had just ended, and people were like, there's not going to be delays, right? It's going to come out on time, right? And they were like, yes, all the trains will run on time. 2 issues are already completely done. It's going to be fine. And this was in February, and the first issue didn't come out until May. So the fact that Marvel has so little regard for standing by their word, I guess, basically, to retailers, I think it's terrible.
Yeah, because I guess the way I understood it was Bendis came up with a better ending, is what they said. And so they decided to give it another issue. I don't know how true that is, but...
How does that not affect other people's stories?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Coming out of that.
Was that why lots of other things have been backed up as well, perhaps?
I don't feel like there's been...
Stuff that wouldn't be affected.
I don't feel like there's been anything in this Civil War. And that, I think it's a fair comparison looking at the original Civil War by Mark Miller and Steve McNiven. There were a lot of memorable scenes in there. Mm-hmm. A lot. Like, I even remember the end of the first issue. Now I'm going to have to go and check so that I don't sound ridiculous. But the way I remember it is it was Reed Richards, Tony Stark, and Yellow Jacket Hank Pym. I didn't even know who Hank Pym was at that point. I was like, who is this other guy trying to stand there with Iron Man and Mr. Fantastic, like in the president's office coming up with the Superhero Registration Act or the 42 ideas that they had or whatever. That's what I remember that being. And then I think issue two was Peter Parker revealing his secret identity and another huge moment in there. Yeah. And cool action pieces, like even though it was completely ridiculous, Captain America jumping off the helicarrier and landing on an F-16 and just flying down. And then I think they say off panel, like Captain America bought the guy a coffee or something like that when he landed. Like, no hard feelings.
Yeah, it's like, you know, there's so many cool moments from that Civil War. And, you know, I realize they've tried to make the impact of Civil War II large, you know, with everything that came out of the third issue. But it just feels like it doesn't have any real impact yet. I mean, you know, it's kind of one of those things where they did something with such a big character like that, where eventually, you know, it's almost like they're going to go back and bring him back again, you know?
Well, I think the other problem is that it's a lot of telling and not showing.
Yeah.
You have... It's really been, I think the Zero issue was like this. I think issue 4 was like this, and maybe issue 2, where it's like an episode of Law and Order, which I just reread for the podcast, Bendis's run on Daredevil. And there was a whole story arc that operated like that. It was like a love letter to Law and Order, where it was an entire superhero story being told through testimony and stuff. And I think that that has a place in the Daredevil book where he's a lawyer, where you haven't really seen that much before. But in the giant Marvel event book where every issue is $4.99 and the entire issue is talking heads.
Yeah.
Well, I know as I read 2 issues of it and I'm sitting it out. I haven't sat anything out in years. I've read everything.
Did you read Axis?
Yes.
Yeah. Jay and I were just talking about this the other day.
I read Original Sin. I read Fear Itself. I've read everything in issues since World War Hulk, and I've read, you know, Civil War and House of M's. I mean, I've read every Marvel event since Avengers Disassembled, basically. And this is the only one that I have no interest in. Don't really care.
Well, I guess when you say or talk about Axis was ridiculous, but there was always something happening.
That's true.
Yeah. I mean, at least, yeah, there were lots of explosions. Has this got guns and shooting in it? All right.
What song did Carnage want sung, or did he sing when he was dying?
Was it Freebird?
I think so.
He wanted a sculpture of himself, like playing Freebird with an American flag. And I think Spider-Man did it. Like, he actually made the statue.
I think a positive thing to come out of it certainly were I've seen an improvement in the Mockingbird title that we were talking about. That's an interesting storyline coming out of it where it's not just Bobby Morse trying to decide one way or the other, like Cap or Iron Man, the way most of the other books are. It's just like, you know, whose side are you on? And then they get torn between them or they switch sides or whatever. But hers, she's trying to find evidence to exonerate Hawkeye. And it's a good twist onto that book. And it finally gives it a purpose, whereas it's kind of been like one-off spy stories that don't go anywhere. And this is a good focusing point for that title.
Which I kind of enjoyed Mockingbird even before it kind of got its focus, you know, just as a break from everything else going on with the Marvel books. But yeah, the most recent issue was pretty good.
And Civil War Kingpin giving Matthew Rosenberg a chance to come onto the scene. It really is.
That I do like. That I have been reading. That is good.
That's, yeah, I think we can all agree that's probably been our favorite part of Civil War II is that storyline.
It's doing, again, classic Marvel storytelling where it's saying that the heroes are preoccupied, now is the time for the villains to do something. We're going to be doing something so under their radar that they might not even notice anyway, but now that they're distracted, they're definitely not going to have any idea what we're doing, and the Kingpin is going to re-seize power. And it is so hard-boiled that I think people were coming in, they were just like, man, I can't believe that's a Marvel book. And it's awesome, and that's actually going to be a book that continues after Civil War. So if the event births us that one really killer title, or hopefully a whole career at Marvel for Matthew Rosenberg, in addition to his creator-owned books for Black Mask, then that's good in my book.
Yeah. If that's all we get out of Civil War II, I'm fine with that.
Better than Axis.
Yeah.
Is anything lasting from that?
Sabretooth is still kind of a good guy.
He's still switched.
Yeah. He's not like a goody two shoes good guy, but he is a reluctant good guy still.
An anti-hero.
Yeah.
And I mean, at least in Original Sin, we got some good Thor storylines. So
yeah, that's still unresolved.
Hey.
Yeah.
Hey. Not that it needs to be necessarily. It's just
I'm fine with it.
How long do you think Unworthy Thor will last before everything gets switched back? Do you think by the time Thor Ragnarok comes around, that's next summer, right?
Yeah, I'm kind of hoping it'll be the same as like the God of Thunder run was, you know, about like 23, 25 issues.
I think that's too long.
You think so? Yeah. I don't know, man. Maybe I'm just biased because I'm
Marvel,
just like,
Marvel
yeah, give
books,
me more Thor books.
Marvel books don't make it to 25 anymore.
Yeah, that's true.
What's the highest numbered Marvel book right now? Is it Amazing Spider-Man?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
No, Amazing is on 16.
Not counting Star Wars.
I'm looking at Deadpool. Deadpool's at 17. That might be the highest one because Deadpool double ships every month.
All right, let's count Star Wars.
Well, then it would be Darth Vader anyway.
Yeah.
At 24, I think, is the highest. And, I mean, if you look at DC, and they're going to get caught up because of all the books that double ship, I think at this point it's probably DC Bombshells at like 16 or 17 issues is probably the longest running.
Teen Titans just came out, right? So that would be their highest numbered issue.
Injustice is in the 20s. I think it's in the teens.
I think it's like 13 or 14.
I'm pretty sure Action Comics is their highest numbered issue. Thank you.
But overall, I think that Marvel is again running into the same problem of putting the cart before the horse, that we are going to be getting the shattered Marvel Now books starting in October, and Civil War will not be over until at least November at this point.
They do another parody issue. They usually do those. The one from Secret Wars was funny because it referenced the fact that the series wasn't over yet.
That doesn't do anything to show that they've learned from any
mistakes
that they've
made. Well, of course not, but it's still funny. I like the parody issues.
I think that that's a big problem, especially looking at DC, where they did learn from their mistakes. DC looked at what they did before the New 52 and the problems in ending those series and doing the DC retroactive specials just to fill in the gap, and they saw how that hurt their sales and drove people away, and they allowed Rebirth to be a more gradual thing, and that works out. The other thing that they said from Marvel at the Comics Pro meeting was that there was no reboot planned, not a relaunch planned, no new number ones for all these series again, which there definitely are.
And I'm sure that information was true if you're only looking in 3-month increments.
I don't see how you put all this together in 3 months at a time.
Or they're just looking a year in advance, and he was in the middle of that year. So I was like, yeah, no new numbers.
I mean, Marvel has their own problems with Comics Pro, and I'll see if I can find the interview I read with Vice President of Sales David Gabriel, who perhaps you'll see at Baltimore next week, Pete. He was saying that the direct market as a whole, all 2,000-plus local comic shops, are, I think they said, the third highest customer for Marvel, and Amazon is number one, and I think Barnes and Noble is number two. Which, wow. When you go into a Barnes and Noble and you see the state of that comic section, I don't see how that's possible. I can't even stand there and look around.
Last time I went into Barnes and Noble, I like just inadvertently started reorganizing things in the graphic novel section because it was so bad.
And then I think number three is like Hot Topic or Loot Crate or whatever, you know, subscription services and exclusive covers where Marvel will do 5,000, 10,000 copies of one thing or 20,000 copies. And he was saying, or if it's the case of Loot Crate, 100,000 copies of a given book that surpasses what the entire direct market does on a title. So Marvel, not nearly as concerned, despite several things like getting rid of the customer service representatives like DC did and Dark Horse has done in the last couple of years. Every Tuesday, we used to get a call from somebody in the DC offices like to tell us what's up, to get some feedback from us. The same with Dark Horse. And we don't have that anymore, but Marvel hasn't been concerned with that as long as I've been here, 10 years or more. Maybe what they really need to learn from these mistakes is to see that market share continue to widen. I don't know. Maybe they'll finally give us some returnability.
Or ease up on all those variant restrictions.
Well, that's something that I've kind of come around on that I don't like as much. Even though I probably said I did, where complaining about too many variants, I'm sure I've done that on the podcast, but there are so many order all you want variants that the original purpose of a variant got lost, because the purpose of a variant was for it to be a limited ratio so you could mark it up and cover costs on unsold product. And order more confidently in a series because you knew you could sell one or two variants and then you'd be good on the whole series. But now with everything being an order all or a qualification variant, what I see is that people aren't buying an extra variant. They're putting back the regular copy that you ordered for them and buying the variant instead.
Yeah.
And then you still have that unsold product with nothing to cover it. And so I've actually started doing, when we do previews for myself, especially on like the DC Rebirth books, if I know, okay, I'm getting the Dave Johnson covers for Flash, or I'm getting the Gary Frank covers for Action Comics, I have started reducing. And if I know there are other customers that are doing that, then I've started reducing the subscriptions for the main books, in some cases pretty close to subscriptions, because I know they're just going to buy that variant instead. Mm-hmm. But it's a further complication for the process. Whereas when it was just the limited variant, like we're still doing on Harley Quinn, we're still ordering 50 copies of Harley and her gang of Harleys and Harley's Little Black Book, because we know we can sell the 1 in 25 variants to two customers for $25 each and pretty much cover the cost on all 50 copies. I think that we're seeing that shift, and I'd be curious to see if it goes back the other way. I think one of the only Marvel books that has any kind of high ratio variant is Death of X, and Star Wars still has a 1 in 100 as well. But even Champions, all the new number ones for...
Champions has, what, a 1 in 1,000 variant?
Yeah, but that's ridiculous. I'm saying there's no yeah. there's no 1 in 100, 1 in 200 variants, really. And I think that they're going to see some changes in that, because with Miles Morales and Champions, I know that there's at least one, if not two, customers that we could sell a 1 in 100 variant cover to, because they buy every cover of every Spider-Man book. It's an interesting transitional period for Marvel right now, where hopefully those sales numbers, you know, even I think that they can complain or brush off the boost in DC to the returnability, even though they'll never really know what those numbers are, those hard numbers. But then I think if it continues in the next several months and into the next Marvel Now in October, then they're going to really have to reassess what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, next Wednesday, Jermaine and Pete will all but ready be on the road to Baltimore Comic Con, so it'll only be me and Austin and Jay holding down the fort. Valerie will be at ACP on Wednesday and Thursday, but then we'll be running the whole show on Friday and Saturday. And that'll take us into our very first chance in capitalizing on the first Friday promotions here in Greensboro, which is traditionally a downtown event, but nothing's to say it has to stay downtown. So we're going to put on our own sidewalk sale on Friday, September 2nd from 5 to 9 p.m. We're going to have two for a dollar comics out there. We have a ton of $5 paperbacks that we've accrued since Heroes Con, And we're also going to be deep discounting some other merchandise that no one will be around to tell us not to do.
I'm going to haul all the Transformers out. Mark them five for a dollar.
Then we will be closed on Monday, September 5th for Labor Day. On Friday, September 9th, and Saturday, September 10th, we will be celebrating Jermaine's 40th birthday here at the shop with Jermaine Exum and the birthday sale. 60% off all regular back issues for 2 days. We have never done a two-day sale as long as I have worked here. And if you came in Saturday morning and you decided you missed out on something when you got home, you had to rush back over here. Now you can come on Friday. If you forget something, come back on Saturday. The deal will still be in place.
And 60%, is that the deepest I've ever seen? I can't remember anything less than 50.
I feel like we did like 60 or 70 at some point.
Well, there was
point.
70% off of Marvel paperbacks for an hour once, and that was absolutely insane. But yeah, I don't remember 60% off before. That's a deep cut.
It is. And when we say regular back issues, we are talking about the boxes, the books in the boxes in the other room. I'm trying to get Jermaine to include variants. You can't hold me to that right now, but I'm trying to get Jermaine to include the variant boxes. But what we're talking about is the just issues out in the boxes that don't have a board on them or anything. The books behind the counter up on the wall, not on sale. The back wall books, not on sale. The books featured above the doorways into the back rooms, not on sale. The Silver Age books, not on sale.
But that still leaves a lot of comic books will be
over
very deeply discounted.
I feel like while Lord of Retail's away, the variants shouldn't stay.
Then the weekend after that, we will be doubling down with Batman Day here at Acme Comics on Saturday, September 17th from 10 to 7. We will be offering 20% off all DC collectibles, statues, and busts. That's as close as we can get without cutting into our margins without eliminating our margins on those things. We will also have the free Batman Day exclusive variant to Batman Rebirth #1. And we will have Thomas Boatwright and Brian Smitty Smith in the store sketching for folks all day. And then at the same time, from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. on September 17th, next door at Acme Comics Presents, we'll be doing Transformers Day, which will be a signing with Chris Giarrusso, artist of our exclusive variant cover to Transformers Titans Return #1, and Byron Dillinger, who's done some amazing kind of chibi style and also super realistic Transformers on his Instagram page. And Jermaine will be doing a special offer on Transformers over there, though he has not informed any of us what that offer will be yet. So all that is happening on Saturday, September 17th. And you can find all of those dates, as well as I think we have something going on every weekend from now until Thanksgiving on the calendar at acmecomics.com. And in the meantime, you can find us online at facebook.com/acmegreensboro. On Tumblr at acmecomics.tumblr.com, and on Twitter at acmecomics. And you can hear this episode as well as all the other episodes emanating from the Acme Wave Projector at our website at acmewaveprojector.com.
I tell you guys, my parents own a movie store.